I was so depressed, I was suicidal. I would have panic attacks. Oh. Just like, why am I here? What's my purpose? What's the point of any of this? Everything started kind of spiraling out when I was 16. That's when I had my first boyfriend.
Okay.
And he happened to be in my church. Hey. And he was one of the bad boys in the church. I was so torn. I really felt like God didn't love me no more. I started to self-destruct. If you have eyes, I'm going to need you to see me in this room. And if you have hands, I need you to touch me because I cannot do this anymore.
Welcome back to the Come See podcast. I'm your host, Damio Keke. And I just want to start off by saying thank you to our subscribers. Thank you so much for your support on Instagram, on TikTok, YouTube. And then, of course, if you listen to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, thank you so much for subscribing. And if you haven't already subscribed, this is a good time to hit the subscribe button and support us, share this episode, because I know it's going to be an amazing conversation. Now, let me tell you about my guest this afternoon. So my guest today is an award-winning worshipper. She has a vocal range that will blow your mind. This Ghanaian singer, songwriter started a career over a decade ago. In 2020, she represented the UK as a top 10 finalist on the season 10 of BET's Sunday Best, hosted by Kirk Franklin, with judges Erica Campbell, Jonathan McReynolds, and Kelly Price. Welcome to the Come See podcast, Niella.
Thank you.
You know what? It's so bad. Do you know how many times I practice saying your name?
That's so funny.
That's okay.
Even
that's okay.
When we spoke, you were like, it's Niella.
That's okay. It happens all the time.
And I get here and I'm like, Niella.
Niella, no, yeah.
Not. Niella. Yes. Where's that from?
So my full name is Daniella Dankokofi.
Really, Daniella?
Yes. And when I was in year 8, it was a thing at the time where I think I was thinking of like, how could I make my name short? Because I feel like Daniella, and I feel like some people would like Danny. And
Danny.
I did not feel like
vibing
just,
with the Danny.
I'm just like, who's that? So I was like, oh, I like Niella, right? And I'd never heard that before. Mm. But around that time, I don't know why all the girls were doing this. Like if their name was like, I don't know, Charlie or Stacey, you would just double the letters. So you would double the E, double the I. It was just a thing. Maybe it was just my school in Edmonton County. I don't know. But so then I kind of wrote it N-I-I-E-L-L-A. And I just kept writing it like that. And then it just became a thing. And I just kept it that way. And then after doing, starting this whole music thing in Ghana, people were like, oh, what name do you want to use? I was like, I like Niella. I'm just going to stick with Niella.
Mm.
So that's how Niella became a thing.
Niella.
Yeah.
You talk about Ghana. Were you born here?
Yes, I was born here. I was born in North London, Hackney. You know, shout out to all the North London babes. but I went to Ghana first time when I was about 10.
Okay.
So we're homeschooled. Me and my siblings were homeschooled.
Here in the UK as well?
Yeah, my mom like homeschooled us. I don't believe she followed any curriculum, but she just made...
My children are not going to that school.
She just made sure that we could read, write, and we had all these different like encyclopedias, science books, like just all this different stuff. So we just knew, you know, just everything. Mad knowledge.
Wow.
But the first time I actually went to school... I was 10 and went to school for about 2.5 years in Ghana, came back for high school.
Okay.
And then got to like college and then dropped out and then...
Okay. We're going to rewind. So
yes.
Why did you go to Ghana when
first
you were 10?
Yeah. Okay. So my mom wanted us to go to... She didn't want us to go to school in the UK because she was like, you know, a lot of the UK kids, you know, they are stubborn.
Disrespectful.
They talk to their parents anyhow. You know, when we go shopping center and that, we hear that one mom like, keep quiet. The child two is like, shut up, mom. Yeah. You know, all this. And my mom would just be like, it's not going to be me. And my mom being a pastor, as you know, so I'm a PK.
Okay.
My mom being a pastor and everything, there's 7 of us.
Okay.
Right? So she had two kids from her previous marriage.
Okay.
And there's a gap. And then my dad, 5 of us. Okay. Very close together. There's about a year and some change between all of us. Roughly about 2 years. So about, you know, a year and some. And I just think with ministry and... all 5 of us potentially, like, I think she was just like, you know, and I think she actually got a word or direction or something that all of them are going to end up in ministry in some way. So I think she was like, you know, I don't have time to potentially mess this up.
Let's go back.
I'm just going to homeschool you over the first couple years of your lives where you're very impressionable. And then after that, when I'm sure that like you can hold your own for the most part, maybe, you know, you can go to school sort of thing. So the first time we went to school was Ghana, because I guess she was like I said, she wasn't following any curriculum. She was just teaching us, you know, addition, subtraction, division in her own.
This is math.
She used to be a teacher in Ghana.
Oh, come on.
And an
accent. Makes sense. Okay.
So I think she just taught us what she knew, but it got to a point where she was just like, okay.
You need more.
Yeah, you're going to need more. But she was like, not UK, so Ghana. So she took us to Ghana instead. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So did she move with you guys, or were you guys like boarding school?
Oh, God, no. we were not in
boarding school, by God's grace.
I feel like we would have run away. Coming from the UK and then going into a Ghanaian, you know, boarding school where like you get beats and all that stuff. I don't personally, I would have just packed my bag one day and just been like, guys, it's okay. <I'm out. laughs> You know, especially I'm very much like things have to make sense. And sometimes when the whole class would get punished because one person was late or one person, stuff like that, my mind can't get past it.
Wow.
Because I want to understand what your logic was. Like, why?
So
why
we should hate that person now. Like, because.
But no, why did I get punished? Like, I was here
because
on time.
They want you to put it on that person.
And it doesn't make sense. So, something like that, I can't wrap my head around. So, like, there was one time this one girl came to school late. The teacher was just vexed. Everyone lie down. They're going to whip everyone on their back. And me and my brother said, no, we're not going to, you know. And it was like, no, you have to. And we're like, if you won't call our grandma, because we're not going to do it. And we didn't. And we picked up our bags and we left and we went home early. And we were like, no, we're from in the UK. We don't do that. We don't understand.
No.
You know, the teacher was so confused. But my grandma, who came to the school, to now come and show
them
headmistress.
I'm sure.
Not to my children. You know, that kind of thing. I was just, so wouldn't have lasted over there. But
So when did you come back?
It was when I was like 13. Okay. Like 13. I was one of the oldest in my year. Mm. So like 10, 11, 12. Somewhere, even like 12, almost 13-ish, somewhere there is when I came back. But yeah, we went to like a public school initially and then a private school after.
Okay.
But my mum was going between Ghana and UK because of the church
ministry,
which was founded in the UK. So she kind of kept going between the two. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's fast forward to you dropping out of college.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that. Did anybody try to beat you there as well?
No, I would have beat them back. At that age, I was like, I know. So it's like a bunch of different things. I'm trying to summarize it for you because I don't believe your
We've
podcast.
We've got time.
It's not long enough We've for this time. Story. Trust me. Trust
Does
me.
It have chapters?
It has. It has chapters. The chapters have segments.
Oh,
you know?
Wow. Okay.
So I feel like everything started kind of spiraling out when I was 16, right?
Yeah.
So when I got to 16.
So you left secondary school?
No, secondary school, I finished that. Like, yeah. Secondary school and everything. And we moved around a lot. So from North London, my mum moved us to Luton.
Wow.
From Luton, we moved to Milton Keynes.
Wow.
And I think she was just trying to take us further out from London because, you know, London kids are
influenced. Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, coming from Ghana school to UK school, it was like being dropped into like an ocean. It was it was such a strange feeling. At first I thought, okay, like, you know, there's all these other black kids and stuff. And then I was kind of terrified of black kids. I'm not going to lie. They were a little bit too boisterous, a little bit too, you know, like
rough.
And I don't want to be the one to be like, they were a bit aggressive, but they were.
Oh.
Especially for me. I grew up very
Ghana.
Introverted, very quiet and everything. Yeah. So I hadn't gotten to that point where I'd come into my character yet. So the fact that like the black kids were just confident and it was a lot. And then some of them were bullying each other and just the girls were like all about hair and makeup and boys.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't there.
Yeah.
So it was very like, okay.
Isolating.
Okay. And I grew up with boys. Like I'm in the middle of three boys,
oh,
right?
Wow.
So I have two sisters and four brothers. So I'm in the middle of three. And so I'm like, boys are very playful, like, nothing means anything. You can say something like about the next man's head. We'll all laugh, ha ha ha, then it will pass by.
On.
But you kind of do that banter with it.
Hey, she's coming for you.
You know, it was just like, so I remember there was one time when we were all doing this like sketching thing. And I was always, so I wouldn't play outside. That's how introverted I was. I wouldn't play with the other kids.
The
I would come out and kind of look at them.
Like,
you know, and then just kind of be like, yeah, there's too much stuff going on.
Play.
And go home and go and just draw.
Oh, wow.
So I was always like drawing and I peek out the window to be like, what are they doing now? Oh, wow. There's like a group here. And they're playing like tug of war or something. Cool. Go back to drawing, you know, that kind of thing. So we're drawing in this class now. And I think this one girl draws this, you know, and the head is a bit big, the body's a bit small. And I wasn't making fun of her, like, ew, your drawing is horrible. But it was like, oh, that's kind of funny. You know, I kind of giggled. And all the other girls were like, oh my God, you don't laugh, her is so nasty. And
her masterpiece.
And I was just like, wait, what? I was like, what just happened? And I was the new girl. And then all of a sudden they started treating me like, oh, we don't like her kind of thing. And I didn't know what, I was like, what did I, so I was like, man, this is too, I don't know what the etiquette is here. Like, what are you supposed to do, not do? Like, the drawing was bad.
Wow. You know what I mean?
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to stay away and just be by myself. So high school also was quite difficult for me. It was
high
quite...
school being college, right?
No, high school.
Like secondary school?
Yeah, secondary school. Okay. Yeah. That was quite difficult for me. I know, being in America, when I say college, everyone's like, you mean like, I'm like, no, not that college. I mean like the college in the UK. A levels.
What about the grades?
They're like, wait,
grades,
what?
This grade. Oh God.
But yeah, so that whole experience was, you know, a lot. And then the people was fighting. Mm. Maybe it's North London. I don't know, but they scared me. They scared me quite
a bit.
Sorry,
North Londoners, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean to put a stereotype on you, but this was experience. I'm just saying my experience. Black people are not aggressive. Please don't cancel me.
We are not.
I'm not saying that. But I think when I got to, so 16, right? Yeah. Being a PK, growing up in church my whole life, moving around. There's a lot going on. Being introverted and quiet and all of those things. And when I got to 16, that's when I had my first boyfriend.
Okay.
And he happened to be in my church. Hey. And he was one of the bad boys in the church. Huh. But this bad boy had time for me.
The pastor's daughter.
Yes.
Is dating the bad boy in the church.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we try to keep it under wraps, but I feel like when you're young, you're just such an airhead.
But wait.
You guys be giggling for no reason.
Let me come in there.
Yeah, go ahead.
You were introverted. Mm-hmm. How did you take time to find boy in church?
I mean, we all found ourselves. I mean, we're all like... Because we're all
he
like...
He found me.
You know, joking and stuff. And he would usually play football with the boys and stuff. And I was always comfortable with the boys. So usually when I'm there with my brothers, whatnot, they're all bantering, whatnot, you know, that kind of thing. And then he happens to be there. And initially, honestly, I'm not going to lie, he was so obnoxious. I was just like, this guy's irritating because he's so loud and everything. But I don't even know how he managed to get my number. Then let me, you know, I can text it to you. One of those things. End up getting my number. Initially, I was just kind of like, okay, whatever. And then the more we spoke, I was like, oh, he's actually kind of nice. Mm. I thought, at that age. And then we tried to keep it under wraps because, like I said, he was meant to be the bad boy. That was,
yeah.
His mom brought him to church to come and find Christ because, you know, he had all these accusations
and
things again. Wow. And then, long story short, ended up losing my virginity to this guy.
Oh.
And I think a couple weeks before, or not so long before, I can't really remember the time duration, but one of the prophets in the church, you know, had been like, you're like, what are you about to say?
I'm waiting to hear what the prophet said.
You know, God is going to use you all over the world. Keep yourself
about you, prophesying
pure.
About you.
This is about me. Keep yourself pure. Make sure you don't lose your virginity to any of them. Blah, blah, blah.
That
this whole very specific. That's what it was, you know. And I'd always been getting a lot of words from when I was young, like God's gonna use this girl, it's gonna take her all over the world, blah, blah, blah. And so that one was very close to you know the time that I think I actually ended up losing my virginity to this guy, right? And it was I had a lot of questions growing up that I didn't get answers to. And I just sometimes looking at the adults, I'm just like, I know I can't even ask you this question because I know you're not gonna tell me the truth. Right? And I think that's where my issue started from when I was young is if you're not telling me the truth and I can tell that you're not telling me the truth, immediately I'm like, I don't trust you.
Yeah. I'm going to find out myself then.
Yeah. Not necessarily I'm going to find out myself, but it's just like...
Okay, I can't confide.
I'm going to try and understand things myself.
Okay.
And that's where sometimes that I'm going to end up finding things out myself happens. Yeah. So it's not like that's my intent, but I'm trying to understand things myself and then I end up in certain situations. So... There were certain questions I wouldn't have asked, or I was trying to just observe and be like, so try and figure things out myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, being super, super curious as a kid as well. And I feel like when kids are quiet like that, you don't know what's going on in their head. And so when it came to this whole like relationship stuff and all that, like, I felt like no one really sat me down to talk about like, okay, these are how emotions are going to play out.
Me too.
It was more like, keep yourself. Don't let anybody touch
don't
you.
Don't smell, boys. Don't go
you
near
know,
them.
That usual
they don't
kinda,
exist until you finish university.
But I feel like that's not the sort of, that's not what I needed.
It's not realistic.
Yeah,
because they do exist. They're right there.
You
and they're talking
them.
To me.
Every exactly. And your emotions too, they're inside your body. And sometimes you don't know what to do with them because there's so much, so strong, so loud.
That age. Listen. Your body is starting to like realize it can do certain things. You're like,
yeah. And so you need someone to be like, okay, these feelings are real. You're going to feel this. You're going to feel sexually attracted to someone. However, this is how you know, I feel like conversations like that would have worked for someone
like you,
like me.
Yeah.
But that's not the avenue in which, you know, things, but I'm not blaming anyone. Everyone did their best. My mom did her best. My, you know, people around me did their best. Aunties, uncles, they did what they thought would be the right way to like deter a young person from having sex or going on the wrong road or whatever. But yeah, long story short, this guy ended up losing my virginity to him.
Yeah.
I wanted to because I liked him. Yeah. But when we actually got there, I was just like, oh, I'm not sure if I want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, at school and stuff, like all the girls are like, yeah, I did it and it was amazing and all that stuff. And then also what was confusing
telling
me
a lie.
Was the fact, well, I think some of them believed the lie. Because they didn't know anything else.
I was one of them.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you tell everybody it was amazing.
Because
even if it wasn't.
But looking back, I'm like, it was not amazing at that age. We did not know what we were doing. But like, the contrast between the fact that the people outside of church looked like they were having more fun.
Yeah.
Looked like their lives were more together than the people in church. That also really confused me.
Okay.
You know, because I was just like, okay, we go to church almost every single day. Because we're the pastor's kids, have ushers meeting, elders meeting, church workers, prayer, whatever.
I'm wondering how you managed to service, lose your virginity.
Blah, blah, blah.
Was it the 1 hour that you had free
I was meant
time?
To go and do my hair.
So your mom then saw you, your hair still was not done.
I don't even know if she saw me. Where was she at? I don't remember. I don't know.
But doing your hair was the cover story.
That was the cover story, yeah. But long story short, I confided because I was also very secretive. I wouldn't say stuff. But after it happened, I was so torn. I really felt like God didn't love me no more.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, he just warned me.
It's like what happens in the Garden of Eden after they eat the fruit.
Yeah.
And their eyes are open. They realize they're naked. There's something about when you lose your virginity that you're like, whoa. Like you see, it's like the world is now in HD. Like before, it was like, You get
this bad confidence.
You're like,
as well.
Whoa.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like a combination of confusion.
I'm a woman now.
Confidence. Like, okay, I know things now. Like you can't chat to me, but at the same time too, it's like, wait,
so
but
confused.
Is this how it's supposed to be? Like, it's like your brain is just, I felt like I was going crazy. And I felt like I didn't have anywhere to put that. Right. And so when, you know, there was a certain lady who was older. Basically, was kind of like, why do you even like him so much? Like, what's even nice about the guy? You know?
You hadn't told her you'd lost your virginity.
No.
I was
going to die on this hill with that information, you know?
Nobody must find out.
Yeah. Toxic. I wasn't going to, because I mean, the way my church was radical as well at the time, I was, I'm not telling this.
Yeah.
And also the fact that we were always terrified that one of the prophets is going to get up and be like, you.
I know what you did.
God told, I said, hey. You know, so I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say something. Because I felt like if I say something, it's going to relieve me of this guilt that's on my shoulders. So she was asking, why do you even like him? You guys are way too close and all this stuff. And I was just like, he's actually nice. Like, he's my friend. He's not just a guy I like. Like, he's my friend. And because I was so quiet, I was also really scared to, like, voice my opinion sometimes or express myself. And this guy, for some reason, would wait. He would be like, is that how you wanted to say what you just said? And sometimes I'll think about it and be like, I don't think so. And he'll be like, it's cool. Like, you can think about it again. I'll just wait. You can say it again. I'll just wait here. And I was like, I felt like no one had ever given me that time of day or been that gentle with me.
Mm-hmm.
So we really did have a strong bond, you know, but I just bonded with the wrong person. And so when I was trying to explain this to people, they would see his obnoxious, loud side and all, you know, and just be like, how is this even making sense?
Yeah.
But after it happened, like one day she was just questioning me, what happened? At a point, I was like, okay, fine, yeah, yes. So I was saying, yes, we kissed. But as I'm saying, yes, we kissed, she's like, did you kiss? Did you have sex? Did you? Like, she's asking all the questions back to back, like overwhelming me. So I said, yes, we kissed. And then she was like, oh my God, you said you had sex. I was like, wait, no, I didn't say, I'm saying yes. Then in that moment, I'm like, you know what? I want to take
just
this thing off.
It.
Like, and because we were so close and she was way older than me, and I just thought, like,
I can confirm.
I should be able to. She's a woman. she has kids. Like, yeah. I don't know. I felt like she you know, led the youth group and everything. I'm thinking I should be able to confide in you. Other young people do. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so I basically told her, I was like, okay, yeah, this is what happened. You know, and she was like, I promise. Initially, she was like, I promise, you can trust me. In the same sentence, after I say, yes, this is what happened, she says, okay, what you're going to do is you're going to go and tell your mom. And if you don't tell her, I will. And if I do, it's going to be worse for you. So you might as well do it yourself. All in the same sentence. That's the day that I was like, human beings are scumbags. What?
What just happened?
So yeah, after that, I feel like it was just like a spiral downwards of the way everything played out. The relationship between me and my mom. When I spoke to her the first time, she was like, well, that's your own business. You know, your salvation is between you and God. What do you want me to do?
Wow.
You know, that's not how my mom responds to stuff.
So that was worse for you.
So that was like, okay, now what's going on now? Mm. So that was it, and she was done. So I backed out of the room. Following day, gently. I go to school. Because I'm just like, I feel like even the woman was disappointed in my mom's reaction. You know? Back out the room. Following day, go to school, come back, open my door. Everybody knows. My brothers are like, oh my God, you did what with who? Like, oh, literally, it's just my younger brother. I could have beaten those boys up that day. My oldest brother pulls me to the side. He's like, what's going on? Like, what's happening? But at least with him, he was, you know, he's older, you know, older brother. So he was a lot more like, what's going on? What happened? I tell him and everything. He's like, yo, you know, mom's been really upset. She's been shouting in this house. Like, I was like,
she didn't shout at me
when we had, huh? So that confused me because she said some pretty hurtful things, you know, which he relayed to me. Maybe he shouldn't have. But he was just like, well, this is what she said. You know, that. And I feel like after that, in trying to mend my relationship with my mom at a point, when I was going to college now, I never used to listen to my mom. And my mom says, if I feel like that's not the right thing, I just won't listen to it. Wow. If I feel like it's the right thing, I will. That kind of thing. And I was quite a headstrong kid. Mm. I feel like my mom also didn't understand me because I was just quiet. Like, she'd be like, express yourself. Nope. And then when I was going to college, I wanted to do arts, like anything, like art, textiles, creative. You know, because I'm very creative. Anything creative, mm-hmm. I'm there, you know. And she was like, oh, why don't you keep your options open and do something a lot more, you know.
Doctor, lawyer,
whatever. Accountant. Mom's not really big on that, but that's the advice she gave me in a moment. And I listened to it. And I went to go do forensic science.
Hey, what?
Maths and biology at college level. During the jump between secondary
GCSE
school
and
college. It's I don't know who it's elite. For. It's for Einstein. It's not for us, you know. And every time I was just doing worse, and then eventually I just dropped out because I was like, this is silly. I know I can't do this.
And I know you didn't tell your mom you were going to drop out. You just...
I did. Oh, actually.
What was her response?
She said, why don't you do something that you can do, like art? That's the day that I was like, what is going on in my life right now?
I remember a crisis at 17, 18.
I honestly was. That day I cried. I think I cried like 1 hour because I was like, I listened to you for once. And I feel like I just wasted all that time. And now all my friends are going to the next year.
And I'm
either going to have to start again. And I just didn't want to do it. I was like, you know, I'm actually done. Like, I'm just going to leave. And I think it's around that time that I started to feel like, you know, maybe I should do music. But I wouldn't have really considered that before because I was too shy, too quiet.
You weren't in the choir? You were
In the back.
Okay, wow. Yeah, like, so you hadn't found your voice.
Oh, I would have led from inside. I had around like 16, but I just didn't have the confidence.
Courage,
to be like,
yeah,
okay, this is what I'm going to do. You know, I would hide.
Asking what's my purpose. Those questions were not even...
That happened from like 17, 18, 19. Then I started just panicking. I was just consistently panicking. I would have panic attacks. Wow. Just like, why am I here? What's my purpose? What's the point of any of this? I didn't ask to be brought here, but I've been brought here. And I feel like I'm just struggling. I've been struggling since, just trying to understand things.
Yeah.
Not to say that my family was bad or anything, but I'm just struggling. Like, I just don't understand a lot of things. You know, and it would just confuse me, you know? So in the midst of all of this, I feel like all the stuff that happened caused me to question faith, caused me to question God, caused me to question leadership, caused me to question, okay, you guys are meant to be God's mouthpieces. You're my first experience of God, but I feel like a lot of you are hurting me. And also what I couldn't kind of reconcile was, I know I wouldn't treat other people this way, or I would handle situations differently because I'd be more sensitive to their emotions and the reasons why people do stuff. Because I knew that none of my motivations were out of malice. Yeah. I didn't do any, even my losing my virginity, I didn't do any of that stuff to try and like get at anyone.
Yeah.
Or I was just trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
So the fact that people were like coming at me the way they were, I was like, did God tell you to do that? Because you're supposed to hear from him.
Yeah.
I know that God wouldn't, because I feel like in this moment, God's trying to help me make sense of all of this stuff. But you guys just got knives. Yeah. So I was, that really confused me. But I feel like God used all of that too, to just help me understand people and humans. And the fact that somebody could be like super amazing on one aspect.
Yeah.
And the next aspect would be just,
They can be anointed when it comes to word of God, but when it comes to actually relationally, it's like...
It's just completely just finished. And especially when it comes to like family, like people that are really close to you, the balance is just really off, especially coming from like Ghanaian, Nigerian, African backgrounds.
Emotional intelligence
is there
such a luxury. It is in an African household. Emotional intelligence, like for growing up, for an adult, African adult who has struggled, who is striving, who is thinking about all the things they didn't have that you have.
Yeah, exactly.
For you to now say, oh, my feelings. It's like,
what are you talking about? What? Yeah, exactly.
And did you fetch water this morning?
Totally get it. I mean, like, that's the sort of upbringing that my mom had. Like, she was like, her mom used to like beat her, throw her down the stairs. She's like, have I ever thrown you down the stairs before? I'm like,
so I think you're doing all right.
You know, of course not. she's just whipping me with her words, but I'm like,
But we're built different, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
The words are enough.
Oh man,
my mom will say something, I'm done. I'm done. And she's just like,
I'm out for a week.
I've not touched you.
I wish you just
hit me.
Just did me like this instead of said that thing, because that's stuck even harder than
maybe somebody who's introverted who thinks a lot.
Yeah, like I really internalize things that people would say. I think over it and all that stuff. Yeah. So. That's where that whole, and then I got to college and I dropped out. I didn't bother with uni. I was like, let's forget about that.
So and how did the crisis, how did you recover from the crisis? Or did the spiral last a few years?
Oh yeah. It lasted into my 20s.
Wow.
So when I was 18, or was it 17? I don't know. But basically I ended up getting arrested for shoplifting.
Sorry, what? Oh my days.
I think at that point, after everything happened and stuff, I became angry.
So now you were just rebel.
Yeah.
Rebel without a cause.
I was... Oh no, please, I had a cause. Especially the fact that... Anyway. So I felt like... I mean, of course it doesn't make sense. Because at the end of the day, this is the thing that I've come to learn. I didn't really have the language for it then. But, you know, I definitely do now. Especially after watching... Have you seen that James Kawalia series? The man from Uganda who was basically a witch, a wizard. From when he was a baby and he was married to a witch.
I need to watch that. I've seen it on YouTube.
Watch it, because I feel like God used that to, you know, change my life. And the fact that, like, growing up, we'd watch stuff like that and it's terrifying. As a kid, you don't understand what's going on there. Like, watch it. Make sure that you give your life to Christ.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, there's evil things in the world. Yes. And you're like,
witches.
Okay. It's true, but, you know, the method sometimes is so terrifying. It's extreme. So I would have stayed, like, usually I don't even watch when I see a witchcraft, this, that, the other. I'm just like, witches, yes, we know they are there, exist. But, you know, what? Come to my house and come and squeeze my neck then, you know?
Please don't. Don't.
I dare you, actually. I'll use fire to burn you. Anyway, the point is, I watched that YouTube video and one of the things that he said, I was like, that's what that is the devil uses trauma and pain and offense. These three things, he uses it to keep us locked in prison.
Yeah.
And so regardless of if I had a cause or not, the point is, at a point, I started to self-destruct.
Yeah, because you were self-sabotaging.
I was sabotaging myself.
How are you getting arrested?
It made no sense. Even the police, we didn't run. We all walked calmly to the car. And when I got to the police station, they put me in a cell for a while, then brought me out and were like, we're just going to let you go. They were like, you don't have a record. Like, why are you even here?
Get out.
Literally, they were like, get out and go home. You know? But I got fined. So that's where now, like, at that time, we were getting £30 from the EMA. So I was like, I don't know how I'm going to pay the fine. And also my mom opened all letters. So I'm like, if this letter gets there before me.
We've all been there. So you're watching the post.
So there's no way I can watch the post enough, because by the time they post stuff, I'm not home. Mm. I get home around like 5, you know, so she's definitely going to get that letter. And she sees these Metropolitan Police or whoever police on there. She's definitely going to be like, I'm sorry, what? So I was like, I need to find some story to tell her. So I now told her that I got set up by this one girl in college.
I know you're gonna.
She picked the thing and she put it in my bag, and she know, and they noticed, and blah blah blah, and I ended up getting arrested. And my mom's just staring at me the whole time.
That same response she had when you said you lost your virginity.
That's a similar one.
Like, I have no opinion. Just staring at me. No comment.
Just staring at me. I was like, okay. But after that, not long after, she was like, oh, we're going to go visit your dad in Ghana. You know? And then I had a different boyfriend at that time. And he was like, if you get on that plane, I want you to know that you're not coming back. I said, ow.
You're getting shipped.
So that's when I was like, okay, fine. My mom had told me that if ever you feel like you can't express yourself, maybe write a letter. Because that's the thing. My mom would talk at me. She can talk for like one whole hour and I wouldn't have said anything. Because she'll be like, I know there's thoughts in your head. Like, tell me. And in my mind, I'm like, if I open this, my mouth, to express the things in my brain,
I'm not sure what's gonna happen.
It's either we're both brawling on the floor or I just don't trust that you can
handle it.
Especially in the way that I want to, because my thing has always been honesty and I just want to say what I want to say.
Yeah.
You know? Otherwise, why are we all just here sugarcoating what we want to say to each other?
Yeah.
So I would just not speak. But that day I wrote a letter, you know, and it said something along the lines of, you might as well go and get a refund from British Airways because no one's going to be on that flight or something. So anyhow, when I came home, my mom was crying. She was holding the letter.
Wow.
Shaking. I was like, what? Yo, there's in seven of us. There's seven of us and I've never seen my mom cry like that before, even over the boys.
So were you that child that's...
I mean, I feel like some of them also had their own, you know, some of them, not only me, who they have arrested before. But anyway,
your mom is a G. Your mom is
she
actually.
She is.
To your mom.
She really did her best.
She tried.
She tried. She did her best, you know. But yeah, when I saw her crying like that, I just said to her, but how do I know that I'm coming back? Mm. Like, I don't trust that I'm coming back. And my mom said, I promise. I promise. I love you. Sorry. Thank you. There's certain words that don't come out of some of our parents' mouths, especially back then. Now,
they don't say I love you.
Now things are different. But back then, those are not things I would have heard come out of her mouth. So the fact that she said, I promise. I've never heard that. I was like, maybe we're like, we've made a breakthrough here. You know? So I went to Ghana.
Tell me.
Ended up on a prayer mountain with me and my three brothers. And we went to go and visit our dad because our dad was there voluntarily by himself. Over there. So we're meant to be there for 2 weeks. So for the first 2 weeks, we were cool. But after the 2 weeks, my mom called and was like, if you guys don't find Jesus on that mountain, you're not coming back down and we're not coming. And it's beyond Accra, beyond Kumasi, beyond, like, it's
far. So you can't even do...
It's far.
I'm leaving.
Well, me and my brother were like, well, we don't care. We ran away in the middle of the night with five cities. That's scraps.
Oh my days. Your family's lit. Come and see drama.
It's like a whole movie.
Greenleaf.
Yeah, God forbid. God forbid, not that kind of drama. But yeah, so after that happened, chaos, absolute chaos. Someone's money went missing at the time that me and my brother ran away. They so thought they we took it. They accused my dad. My dad didn't know where we were. Only one of my brothers knew where we were, and he wasn't about to, you know, snitch. And say anything. We didn't tell the one who was a snitch, you know yourself. Anyway, so then, long story short, the whole... this other lady also left with her church people. They'd come to pray and they were leaving. So my dad accused the lady going of possibly smuggling me and him with her. So she turns her bus around, comes back to where the mountain place is to be like, I don't have your kids. This is if you want search, you know, and that becomes a thing. Eventually, the people on the mountain come down to the town. Goodness. They have to go and call the chief to come and intervene because it's just chaos everywhere. Because, you know, in Ghana, unfortunately, back then, if someone is a thief, they basically stone you and kill you.
Wow.
Right? And so, like,
what
my,
was,
one of my
the money that was missing wasn't a little, it was a lot.
It was
lot.
Like 1,500 cities.
Okay.
You know, back then, it's like 2010?
That
was big money at the time. And so one of my brothers has a cutlass that if anyone comes close to him and, you know,
your dad.
Other brother and dad, he's... Who's coming? Because you're gonna get it first. And the other thing about Ghanaian people is all mouth. They're not actually gonna say
no
nothing.
Action.
Anyway, even though they will kill thieves, but I've actually seen people actually they stone like that's it's very scary.
Yeah,
but that's the only thing that causes them to actually like.
And you were not afraid when you were running of all of this.
At this point, what's there to lose? Because we literally felt like we got no rights. We've got nothing. Our passport is gone. Our mom's not listening to us. We're in this village. Like there's nothing to the. we're just going to try. If we end up somewhere, whatever happens, it can't we'll be worse with than the consequences. Can't be worse than the mountain.
We'll deal with the consequences.
Do you know what I mean? So all of that stuff, my mom finally came, took my brothers, and that's all I wanted. I wanted them off the mountain because they were basically collateral damage. They didn't do anything. The two younger ones.
It's that same thing that happened when you were in that Ghanaian school where the one girl was late and everybody got punished.
Everyone ended up getting lumped because it needed to look like a family holiday. So everyone got lumped in and one of my brothers was not doing okay. Like, really? He was really stressed out on that mountain. Like, and I felt bad because I was like, he doesn't deserve to be here. But my mom was resilient, you know what I mean? So once we left and all of this popped off, whatnot, my mom's, you know, on her way, all the way coming back to come and pick them up. Once, by this time, me and my brother managed to make it to Accra.
You are... You know, if they ever do a Christian celebrity, I'm a celebrity.
This is a good story.
You need to be on that.
Thank you.
So that you can be Bush Tucker Charles.
It's a distant memory now. But
my goodness.
So we all make it back, you know, to Accra. Once everything dies down, we come back to the house. But on the condition of, you know, just please leave us alone. Like, we're not going anywhere, whatever. Long story short, one year from then, I end up doing a reality TV competition singing. Because I have nothing to do with my life. At this point, I'm like, I've literally got nothing.
I've failed
to lose. Let me go. If I don't get through, cool. No one even knows me like that in Ghana. Probably there's the kids I went to school with when we were like 13, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's not a big deal. So I went, ended up getting through the competition, coming second. And that's when, for the first time, I was like...
Hang on a minute. Okay, second is...
Yeah.
Maybe I've got something here.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't get bored. I didn't get tired. I felt like this, you know, it felt good.
For the first time, something made sense.
Yeah. But then the issue became, what type of music was I?
Okay. So that was secular.
Yes. It wasn't just a mainstream show, like X Factor or The Voice or whatever. It wasn't a Christian show. So after that, that's when I was like, what type of music am I going to do? But in the midst of all of this, I was depressed. So bad. So bad that like I felt physical pain from how much, like, the weight of the depression. I always felt like I was in pain. It felt like my heart was always beating just a little bit faster. I was so skinny. I couldn't put any weight on. If I show you pictures afterwards from that time. And like, I would just always lose weight so much.
Why did no one see all this? Because you're in a spiritual household. Like, you know,
the devil was attacking me. You know, from the outside looking in, the devil was trying to take that one. So we're just going to pray. And I mean, you know, that's mainly what it was. I know people were praying for me. But beyond that, it's like, I don't know. There wasn't any like conversations. Like, what do you feel like you need? Or what do you, there wasn't that. It was just, we'll go to prayers. We'll go to church. We'll pray. So it was mainly me, like, just fighting it out with God. Like,
yeah.
I remember the night, this was before the competition, and this was, like, the height of me being depressed. And I was so depressed, I was suicidal. That's how bad it was. Because I was like, what's the point of any of this? And I think what was even hurting me the most was, I understand when other people disappoint me. I understand when other people hurt me. I can't control them. It is what it is. Sometimes they feel like they're doing the best, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even coming out of a good place, but it's still hurting me, still wounding me. But when I hurt myself, where I thought I was making a good decision for my life, and then now I look back on the decision, it's backfired in my face. And I'm like, okay, so now what?
I can't even trust myself.
I can't trust myself. That was hard for me. Like, that was really hard for me and very humbling. And so that's where I was like, you know, when I was going through this whole depression and stuff, I was like, yeah, I don't even know if God is real. And I don't know if any of this stuff is real. As much as when I was younger, I've seen miracles. I've seen someone who's dead come to life.
Wow.
I've seen all this stuff. But I also feel like when you're a kid and you see this stuff, at a point, it's like, you just kind of become a bit desensitized also. So this one night, I just go on the floor because I'm like, I don't have the courage to take my life. I don't have the courage to slit my wrist and wait for it to bleed. I'm like, you know. And the other thing is like sense of humor. Like God used my sense of humor to save me as well.
Yeah.
Because in the midst of these serious moments, I'll find something to laugh about. Doesn't make no sense. And I was like, I can't take the pills. I don't know how many pills to take. They might pump my stomach. Next thing I know, I'm back. You know, all these different things are going through my head. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, the house is quite, like, the floor that we're on is quite high up. But I'm like, it's just one story. It's a high story because, you know, I don't, you know, Africa houses, like, they're not the short UK. They're, the ceilings are high.
Like townhouses.
That big POP chandelier. So it's high. And I'm like, it's high, but it's not high enough. And I feel like if I jump, they're going to find me in the morning with my leg.
And you're still going to be alive.
And I'm still going to be alive. Like, oh, hey, guys. You know? And for some reason, even though I was crying, I kind of giggled for a second. Like, it's not going to work. And I just went on the floor and I just prayed and I said, you know what? I'm going to use God's word. Like, I'm going to hold him to his own word. I'm like, almost like I'm going to challenge you with your own word.
Yeah.
And I basically said to him that... It says in your, it says that we are created in your image and likeness. And I know it says somewhere, if it's like Isaiah, it also says in Psalm somewhere that, you know, he has a hand. That's not, he has a hand and he has eyes. So I was like, if you have eyes, I'm going to need you to see me in this room. And if you have hands, I need you to touch me because I cannot do this anymore in the way that I've been doing it. If you don't come and do something, I'm either going to spiral myself out and be in a really bad place. Or, I don't know, maybe I just go crazy. I don't know, but I that night I cried so much that, you know, you get to the end of yourself, you can't even, like, you can't even breathe. Yeah. And I crawled back onto the bed and just slept and just forgot about it.
Yeah.
I forgot about the prayer. I was like, no, if you feel
you
like...
You really cried. Because you know when you sleep after you cried, that cry was like...
Yeah. And afterwards, I was like, if you feel like you want to answer that prayer, go ahead. If you also feel like, if you're not real to and you don't answer that prayer, then, well, this dirty path I'm on, I just continue down it. You know? And it was 1 year after the show that, you know, come second, whatnot, trying to figure out what type of music do I want to do and everything. Even though I was leaning towards Christian music. Because the one type of music that in the midst of the depression gave me relief was Christian music for a moment.
Mm.
You know, all other types of music, sometimes they will even encourage me to be crying more. I remember one time I was listening to
it's depressing,
Rihanna,
man.
I don't want to do this anymore. And I was just like, ah! And then halfway through, I'm just like, what?
This is
not the song off. I was like, man, this ain't making me feel any better. If anything, it's encouraging me to continue crying.
Yeah.
Turned it off. I was like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. So I knew I was leaning towards Christian music. Yeah. And 1 year later, I'm standing in this one church. There was this one pastor that just believed in me. You know, listen to my voice at the time. I was like, okay. But yeah, he believed in me. He would invite me to come and lead worship in his church. And I was standing there about to go and minister. And it was like movies. Like when people have flashbacks. It was like me, high school, you know, all the different things. It was like bang, 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 bang. Then all of a sudden it was like, bang, I'm standing back in the church. And I just realized the thing is gone. The pain is gone. I was like, the cloud, that dark, thick, black cloud that felt like it was following me all the time, the depression, that it was gone. And I even realized that my mind was processing different, like my thoughts were taking a different path from where they were taking before. I was just different. I wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
There was still a lot of work to undo, you know, but I was different. And I don't know the moment, the day, the time that it went. I don't know when it went. I just knew that it was gone.
Yeah.
And it almost felt like God was looking at me saying, I got you. And I was just, I started to, you know, well up because I was like, man, so you do it here.
Faithful.
So I was faithful. Okay. I prayed. Nobody else was there. It was just me and you, you know, and that kind of like, solid, like me and God. I was like, you know what? I might not understand everybody else. I might not understand everybody else's methods. I might not, you know, but at least I know you listen to me.
Mm.
Especially when I'm like at my wit's end.
Yeah.
And so that was my turnaround moment that kind of, you know, I still had so many, you know, slip up moments here, there, whatever.
The righteous man falls seven times and rises again.
But at least it set me on a path to be like, I'm going to do better, whatever that looks like. So that's how this whole thing started. And then I found myself in the music, doing Christian music, gospel music. Yeah.
It's such a shame that you're going back to the States.
You said I'm going back. Why? What do you need me for?
Because I need a part two.
Oh, everyone says this. Literally, all the podcasts I've been on recently, I need a part two, man. Because I feel like I can't even go into all the... Like, there's so much, you know, that I can't
We can do different parts.
All the details.
Don't mind.
But yeah, no problem. Just the summary version.
What would you say to someone who's listening and they're like, Niela, hey, it's like you're living my life because I'm going insane. I'm going crazy. I don't know what I'm going. I'm coming.
Yeah.
I'm battling with some of the stuff that you've mentioned. What would you say to that person? in this moment?
Honesty. Just be honest with God. I find that a lot of times, even, you know, growing up as a PK and just, we always just felt like there was a formula that you needed to speak to God or to pray. But especially when you're in those places, you don't have the tools to do that, like, elevated elite prayer. Forget that.
The nice. Allow it. All the shabakin and the vocabulary.
Forget that. Even God knows that that's nonsense at that point. Yeah. Because it's like, what are you doing it for, actually? Mm. Right now in this moment, what you need is to just tell God, yo, help me.
Yeah.
I can't make these decisions on my own. Or now I'm at a point where I've gone beyond being able to make a good decision for myself. Mm. I need you to help me. Or even when I make a good decision, it's not even good. It backfires. So I've had so many moments of just being, I would speak to God throughout the day. That's what I realized would help me, to just speak to him and just be like, okay, So we did that, you know, that probably wasn't a good idea. This one, that was good, you know. This one, you know, but it was just be honest. Like, you can't, if you're dealing with a sex addiction, just tell God, I'm a sex addict. Help me. Don't just be like, oh, the spirit of lust has held me in chains. And that's, hello.
You know, yeah, because the demon's like, who are you fooling?
It's those things there where you feel like you have to be proper with God. Like,
be messy. God is messy.
Always there. Even when you were there doing the thing with the guy, God was there. When you picked up the weed or whatever, God was there. When you scammed that person and you pressed enter, God was there. Like, yes. He's always there. So what's the point in lying? All he wants you to do is just turn around and be like, okay, this is me. Bear it to him as nasty, as bad, as whatever as it is. And just be like, I need help. You know, there's so many times I've prayed, if you don't come and change this desire that I have, I'm just going to keep going. Because I try and stop it myself. It will stop. Okay, yeah, 1 month.
And then
right back.
Relapse.
2 months, right back. 1 week, right back. Sometimes 6 months, 1 year, wow. Then bang, right back. You know, so it's like, unless the Holy Spirit takes you through steps of deliverance and also shows you how to maintain your deliverance, you can't just figure that out.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that Christianity today makes people kind of feel discouraged is we're made to feel like our deliverance is in our hands. Like, you need to get yourself delivered.
Right. You can walk your... I mean, you have to be willing.
Yeah, yeah.
Be willing, of course, but it's the same Kawalia man, right, who said that... So he was dealing with... he had cancer. And the cancer was basically... It basically killed... He was alive, but he was dead.
Yeah.
Right? And in that time, God sent this one lady to read, I think, 24 chapters over him every single day.
Mm.
And he said he was in consistent pain. But anytime that girl would come and read those 24 chapters, the pain would go.
Mm.
Long story short, eventually the hospital are like, there's nothing we can do. This man's a corpse. They send him home to go and die. When he goes home, I can't remember all the details, but long story short, he started reading 24 chapters for himself. Up until today, he reads 24 chapters every single day.
Wow.
And that's part of his deliverance.
Yeah.
And so I have a similar story in some ways where I realized I couldn't read the Bible consistently. I couldn't pray consistently. In all my life of being a Christian, I've had ups, I've had downs, but no consistency. I'd have moments of reading, praying, off.
And then
reading. I tried to read the Bible in 1 year. Oh, I think like 4 times.
We've all.
Promise you, I wouldn't get past Genesis like 4. Wow. That's how bad it was, you know?
Genesis is even okay. You wouldn't get past Genesis.
How is that okay? That's 4.
You know, there's Leviticus, there's, you know...
No, the point is I didn't even start. If I didn't get past Genesis 4, it means I didn't start.
You did not start.
I didn't start anything. And God showed me how to keep my deliverance, you know? And it was to have daily declarations every single day, right? And there's like, even that in itself is a whole different story.
Niela, you have to come back. I'm sorry.
But yeah, so it's the Holy Spirit that would say, because there was a point where like, okay, I'm doing the daily declarations, which are also scriptures. There's scriptures in it as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I kind of substituted that for reading my word because I'm like, okay, but I'm technically reading the word. And I felt like God was like, that's nonsense. Can you do the both? So
a little bit of snack instead of the meat.
So yeah. I started doing... read the Bible in 1 year and the daily declarations. Yeah. And then it was like, okay, that's cool. Now you don't have any worship time. You don't have any time of worship. Because I was kind of seeing that as, okay, the when I'm doing my reading and stuff, I would have worship playing in the background. But mm-hmm. it's like, you're not actually engaging.
Just, yeah, it's in the background.
Because it takes time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I feel like I would have stuff to do. So I was trying to like shortcut stuff. And so, you know, one of my pastors was like, if you have to rush through your devotional, you're not waking up early enough. I said, oh, man.
Okay.
Why are you going to say that? So that's when I was now like, fine, go wake up earlier. So now it's dedication.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of times that people also say like, oh, I've tried everything. Have you though?
No, I've tried everything I'm willing to try for now.
Have you though? I've seen people leave the faith like, I tried everything and God didn't answer me. You woke up every single day, read your Bible, prayed, worshipped for 40 days straight, and God didn't answer? Or you fasted for 40 days straight and God didn't answer? Or you did both for and God didn't answer? Or you...
It doesn't,
there's even times God has asked me to leave where I am and go to a different country to a prayer, whatever, over there. And that's where he'll answer me. I remember when that happened, I was so vexed. Because I was like, yeah, but you're right here because I can hear you.
I was literally just about to say, it doesn't even take all that. But
You're right here. So why can't you talk to me here? That's how I now, me myself, stumble onto the story of Elijah. Where Elijah's complaining in the cave. And all the prophets. Yeah. And God is like, go and stand at the edge of the cave. And I'll speak to you there.
Mm.
Who told him to go? God. Which means that God could have spoken to him here. But sometimes God needs you to shift your location before he speaks to you clearly, right?
Yeah.
And so when I read that, I remember just thinking, I have to go all the way to Ghana? Why?
Again? That's country.
That race. So went all the way there. And then God actually spoke to me when I went there, you know? So there's no way you can tell me that you've tried everything. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
It's just not possible.
Before you get to your everything, I've tried everything, God will meet with you. Before you get to the like...
Because this is the thing, he actually wants to. He's just kind of waiting for you to tune your frequency into his, because he's actually talking the whole time.
Yeah.
So if it's that you're in the wrong community, try a different one. If it's that maybe you have too much noise around you, your friends are influencing you, take some time off. If it's that you don't have a routine with God, and this is the thing, we always want God to be faithful to us. Well, we are not faithful to God.
Yeah.
Can God trust that every single day I'm going to see Niela show up at 7 a.m. At this time, she's sitting in this location and she's reading her word and she's waiting. Or I know she's going to do it for 2 days. On the third day, when I come, she'll be in the bed.
Sleep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we also have to be, it's even biblical, where we have to be, it says, like, God, I want to be found worthy of your calling. What does that mean? Like, God will just say, oh yeah, sure. There's actually things that you do to be worthy of God's calling. And someone, I think it was the same Pastor Vic, said recently that God has favorites. Well, I can't remember who said it actually. All these pastors talking at the same time. But yeah, God has favorites, but you can make yourself one of God's favorites.
Mm.
And I was like, that's so true. You can actually tug on God so hard that he'll be like, okay, what is it?
Yeah.
But until you've gotten to that point, you have to go and you have to get like beyond the end of yourself to get to that point, you know? Is it going to be stressful for you? Of course. Is it going to get to a point where you're like, I'm tired. I've not eaten anything for, you know, or I'm having to eat after six for how many days? Like, that's not comfortable. No. You disrupt your routine for God. Yeah, there's no way that
you're in pursuit of him.
There's no way that he's not going to show up, which is another thing
he will
that
respond.
The Kawalia man said, so you should definitely go and read.
I'm going to watch it. And we're going to beg Niela to come back. I think she's going back to the States soon.
Why? Are you having my States trauma?
Okay.
I've not gone yet.
You have not gone yet.
Let's relax.
Okay. All right.
So I'm here for a while.
So hopefully we'll get Niela to come back in, because this is literally like chapter one of like 10 chapters.
This is true.
So we're going to beg her to come back in.
You have to beg. I'm right here.
Okay. We have it on record. Yeah? It's been recorded. So we're going to get Niela back in and she's going to continue to tell us her amazing story. I need to know how you developed a heart of worship. And there's so much. So we're definitely going to get you back in. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For sharing, you know, the challenges that you faced with your mental health, with, you know, discovering your purpose, with feeling fulfilled in life, and encouraging us that indeed, when you cry out to God, he will hear, he will answer, he will show up.
He will.
So for now, please do like, subscribe, leave a comment in the comment section. let me know what you're going to take away from today's conversation. You've been listening to the Come See podcast with the lovely Niella. And until next time, God bless you.